Monster Man, Episode 357, Sackcrawl and Topi. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two more monsters from the Undead section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we do that, though, I have to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like both of today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I'm going through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, and using that as a springboard to talk about using religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much to new patron Jesse Charette and returning patron John David. It means a lot to me that you're enjoying the show enough to want to support it. Alright, our first monster for today is the Sackcrawl. Now, the Sackcrawl first appeared in probably a lesser-known D&D product, and that was 1983's M2, Maze of the Riddling Minotaur. This was part of a series of solo adventures, I guess, that had an invisible ink gimmick. I mean, I don't know, I never played any of them, but, you know, the idea was that you would sort of reveal the bits that were written in this invisible ink, I suppose, and that would tell you sort of the secret bits of the adventure. So trying to kind of mechanize, you know, the way in which the DM doles out information to the players. Just another example of one of the features of solo games that would ultimately, of course, be done much better by computer games. It reappears in, and is probably better known from, X9, The Savage Coast. A Sackcrawl is a kind of undead being that is composed of many different angry spirits of the dead. So it comes into being at a site where a lot of people have died, and often where they have died with some kind of need for revenge or some kind of anger at, you know, the fate that befell them. So examples would be places like battlefields or areas that have been hit by a plague. You know, anywhere that a lot of people might have died suddenly could produce a Sackcrawl. And it appears like a skull of, you know, whatever species, surrounded by a cloud of mist. And this cloud can extend tendrils of mist that it uses to choke its targets. And those chokes are pretty dangerous. The first hit does a level drain. But fortunately for its opponents, the Sackcrawl only drains one level. So if it latches onto you with its tendril and continues to drain your life energy after that, it's just taking your hit points. The Sackcrawl can also raise and control undead of the same species that it was in life. So again, this is consistent with like it being on a battlefield. So if you imagine that you're at the site of some massacre and there are, you know, the bones of halflings everywhere and this halfling Sackcrawl is menacing you, then it can raise up those halfling bones and they can also join in its fight. I don't like level drain, but in early versions of D&D, that's what you gotta live with. But I like the Sackcrawl. I like the idea of a death event that has this lasting impact, and it reminds me of the Ghostly Horde, if that's what it was called, which is neither ghostly nor a horde, but it was just a sort of illusionary trap. I feel that was trying to present the same idea almost, but the Sackcrawl does it in a more conventional monster that you fight kind of format. I assume that all the insistence on, like, of the same species or whatever is because in the scenario it comes from, it's a bullywog or something. I don't know. I haven't read it. You know, but I don't know why you have to be picky about it, right? If we assume that the army of Goodlandia, it has humans and half-elves and halflings and gnomes and whatever in it, like, I don't see why they couldn't all be controlled by the same Sackcrawl, right? The point is that the quote-unquote race thing, I don't think is the point. The point is that the Sackcrawl controls the dead of the same tragedy that gave birth to it. And so in its original context, I'm sure that that's, you know, they're all elves or whatever, but I don't see why it has to necessarily be that way. So yeah, the Sackcrawl is pretty good, and a good way to make, you know, a site that could be a clue or could just be there to set atmosphere, but then like give it some interactivity, some pretty dangerous interactivity, rather than just look at the dead and contemplate the horrible tragedy that occurred. You know, we have this monster that's actually going to bring that very forcefully to our minds. Next up, we have the Topi. The Topi is a potentially interesting monster that I have some reservations about in terms of the way it's presented. And if that sounds familiar, you might be predicting that this monster comes from X8, Drums on Fire Mountain. And if you were thinking that, then you would be right. Drums on Fire Mountain just kind of goes whole hog on this South Seas Savages Cannibal King with the big nose ring kind of aesthetic, and it's not great. You can see where it's drawing on this tradition of pulp adventure fiction, and I get it, but, well, you shall see. Because a topi is basically the shrunken head version of a zombie. It is a whole body shrunk down to tiny size. Presumably all the bones have been removed. And this is done by a process, quote, known only to certain primitive tribes, close quotes, which, you know, not wild about that. Again, I don't want to single out a particular author here. This is the language of the literature that D&D was drawing on. This was the language of the era, and it's very much the language of this era, right? Like, if you say primitive tribes in 2021, you know, anthropologists will be irritated because that's not the language we use. The people you're describing as primitive have every right to be offended, but I don't think that that is an uncommon thing for someone to say. So I'm not trying to say, oh, Graham Morris, you despicable racist, you know, far from it. That was the common parlance of the era, and I doubt he thought twice about it. But, you know, because I do have that kind of background, an archaeologist, not an anthropologist, but covers a lot of the same basic principles, it bugs me. See, but the thing about the topi is that they are a fun little addition to your undead collection. They are quite quick and nimble. They have a claw attack that has a poison that you have to save against, and if you fail, it slows you like a slow spell, so that's kind of neat. And they are kind of reverse skeletons. So if you imagine that skeletons, right, are all bones and no meat, and topi are all meat and no bones. So they only take half damage from bashing weapons, although you can use the bashing weapon to, like, you know, knock them off their feet, bonk them into a wall or whatever, and that causes them to lose their next turn. So it's not completely useless. Indeed, there are definitely times when, if you're not a real damage dealer, if this is the druid clubbing a topi with their quarterstaff, they'd much rather cause it to lose an action than do it a couple of points of damage. So it's reverse skeletons, right? Pointy damage good, blunt damage bad. I always like those little things, you know, we just do a little mechanical thing that helps remind us of the kinds of weapons the characters have. Not in terms of, like, caring about the technical differences between different kinds of weapons, but just because it helps us, again, to... This is something I've been thinking a lot about lately, this way in which these mechanics can help us visualize or inhabit the characters. And I think that that's what this does, at least I hope so. In addition to that, they're fast movers, they can leap, etc. They're a little bit like the tiny mummy zombie raptor things in The Mummy 2. Although obviously they predate that. And they basically, yeah, they fit into that kind of speedy zombie category that wouldn't catch on until much later. But they're great. I think, honestly, that if you have, you know, the mad alchemist have some, like, tank that they dunk their victims in, some machine that turns them into topi, you know, extracts all their life energy, and which is obviously in your bones, and then just leaves them like a little animate leathery husk, that's super gross. And people would be, you know, would be pretty into it. Like, this could fit right into any kind of, you know, mad scientist lair, gothic castle, whatever. I think, you know, it takes only the gentlest of sanding to get the primitive tribes stuff off of this. And indeed, if you look at the illustration, it's just, you know, the scary skull-like head of a zombie creature. It's not something like some of the other more stereotypically based images we've seen. So I think the topi needs just a little bit of a polish to make it a really good and usable monster. A lot of fun there. I like it. All right, so that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. For the rest of this week, we'll be doing special episodes. In our next episode, we're going to take a look at a sci-fi classic, very topical, with the new film coming out, but we're going to look at the sandworms from Frank Herbert's Dune. And after that, we got another listener-chosen special episode coming up. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.